Coming up on the Star Wars Report podcast, Colin Trevorrow talks episode 9, John Boyega's the villain! We'll find out what he says. Boba's bounty, and of course, spoilers at the end. Let's do it! Hey, everybody, welcome back. It is the Star Wars Report podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. How you doing? Come on in. Let's get straight into the show right now. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. Host of this here podcast, you are listening to the Star Wars Report, episode 285. Just about the most fun hour of Star Wars podcasting this side of the Outer Rim. Here to help me, as always, is my good buddy and yours. It's Mr. Mark Herleman.
Hey, everybody. How are the Star Wars fans? How are the casual fans? How are the film-only fans and the EU fans? How is fandom today?
You'd be a great hype man at a convention panel.
I really feel it, man. That's like what I usually do at Scouts, too. I'm the hype man.
It's like, are there any EU fans in the house? Yeah, no,
from
man.
From the left, give me an E. From the right, give me a U.
Hey, Jabba. Wait, that's a reference that people won't get. Hey, I'm just going to say it right at the top of the show. Right now, as you're listening to this podcast, available at facebook.com/Star Wars Report is the Star Wars Celebration Orlando mini documentary that we've just released. Mm-hmm. It's called Faith in My Friends. It chronicles the story of Celebration with a little bit of a message to it. It's about friendship in Star Wars, and it's kind of chronicled through the lens of our time at Celebration. It was so much fun to make. Took so much time. I spent so much time editing this thing, man. And then I would think it's finished, and somebody would notice something, and then I would have to re-edit that again. But finally, it's out. Ladies and gentlemen, go check it out. It's at facebook.com/Star Wars Report, and of course, linked across all of our social media. I'll probably do a blog post about it and stuff like that. I'm not doing a Reddit AMA, but maybe one day. Not doing like that. You know when like celebrities have like a big project that they're trying to plug is like the big thing you do, a Reddit AMA. Man. But no, we've got a big old jam-packed show. You know, I didn't mention it in the teaser up front. I probably should have. We're talking Sansweet. I have thoughts. I'm sure people listening to this podcast, if you've listened to any amount in the last few months, you know Riley's got thoughts on this.
Yeah, your video comes at the right time. I mean,
it's true. It's sort of like the opposite. But
yeah, you're the light side of friendship, and Stan Sweet's story is kind of like the dark side.
Listen, I'm just going to say it right here at the top of the show. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. All right. That's for later in the show, though. Let's get into the news.
I have something to report.
Professor, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Colin Trevorrow, another update on the sequel trilogy and, an emotionally resonant conclusion.
That's deep.
This is from Screen Rant, by the way. Colin Trevorrow said, quote, "The process of Star Wars began way back in August 2015 when I looked at what J.J. and Ryan had done, and I'm very fortunate that I'm surrounded by some really, really brilliant producers and creative minds, Curie Hart at Lucasfilm, at Story Group, and my producer, as well as Kathy Kennedy, and also J.J. and Ryan, Larry Kasdan. I mean, these are the best minds available, and everyone's engaging in making sure this is the most satisfying and emotionally resonant conclusion we can possibly deliver."
Wait, did you notice the one thing that jumps out like a hot poker in the butt?
August
2015, when I looked at what JJ and Ryan had done.
Yeah, wait a second.
Wait a minute. Because I recall dates after 2015 where they're like, they're going back and doing things. This isn't finished. Like, wait. You know, this goes along with that whole article they had not too long ago about the Story Group not giving points to them and stuff. I mean, clearly they are getting more than just one director to sit in at a time kind of thing. Like, that's actually really exciting news. Like, okay, they are working on a continuity type Bible of some sort here. I mean, if you've got that many names all in one room and they're all talking about each other's movies, that tells you there's a lot of communication happening, which is nice because
like
the last few articles kind of make it feel like it's a little more hands off.
Well, and I like the fact that it points to there's a lot of communication and it started early.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Which is not necessarily. Here's the thing: like I was willing to accept that each of the directors kind of just like took the story and then did their own thing and maybe talked just a little. But I really do think that they are working together pretty closely, especially based off of this quote. And more importantly, they've been doing it since early on. August 2015, 6 months before The Force Awakens even came out. The guy directing the sequel to that, Episode 9, is what they're focused on. I like that. I think that's a good indicator. But, you know, even having with the same dude directing all three original Star Wars films, George Lucas, like, he didn't even have everything mapped out as he went along, and it turned out okay, I'd say. So
Yeah, and I think that's the testament to Star Wars, is for the most part, it is kind of create as you go, and it's been doing pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. I've no complaints so far from this guy who does a weekly Star Wars podcast. Hey, guys, you like Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so.
Did you see also Cinema Blend had more on Carrie Fisher's death in Episode 9 and how Trevorrow is going to handle that?
Yeah, now is this an interview with him as well?
I believe it was. He mentions she's a major character. That's not a secret. She really was. It was extremely sad for all of us, mostly just because of how she's so loved by the Star Wars family and everyone that worked with her. And now this is the part I find the most interesting. He says, I feel like our options are limited mostly by ourselves, in that there is only certain things that we are willing to do. But I can guarantee it will be handled with love and respect and all of the soul that Carrie Fisher deserves. Now, I don't know about you, Riley, but that just basically screams the fact that they said that they're not going to do CG.
I was going to say, he's not so subtly referencing the one time Lucasfilm has ever publicly addressed rumors.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, it almost sounds like creative bitterness. Like clearly he's only bitter in the aspect that she's gone and this is where he has to go. But I think it sounds like, you know, he would be willing to do a CGI carry had they not already stated that they wouldn't.
You think?
Which, you know, because I keep going back to, unless they had planned on General Solo passing on in the film, you know, how else are they going to handle it unless they do something off screen? And I, for me, the only thing closest to a situation like this is going back with Paul Walker when he was playing Brian O'Connor.
Yeah, we've mentioned that many times here. Yeah.
Franchise, because they could have easily, plot wise in that story, killed off Brian O'Connor as part of the aspect of, you know, the guy's coming for everybody. He killed Han. He could have killed Brian. And then they could have worked that into the story the way they did, but they did not. And therefore, when you move on past that, it's odd when you have moments where everyone comes together and yet the Brian character's not there for his family. And yet family was always so critical to that story, just like it is Star Wars. So
yeah,
that's where I wonder, you know, how delicately they're going to do it. You know, are they going to do it off screen? Are they going to do it where we watch a planet blow up? And then are they going to keep her alive? And it's from what I've seen with the Fast and Furious franchise that I almost think the live route is too playing it safe. And I don't mean to be insensitive here. I'm just thinking of the story, not the real life actors and stuff. But that, from what I've seen with the Fast and the Furious franchise, they went that safe route. And I feel like it didn't do the story beyond that one film as much justice as they could have done.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know. When I think about it, my main concern is that I don't really have one. Like, I actually feel kind of indifferent. It feels weird to say this, but I feel a little bit indifferent because I do have so much faith in the process that they are, whatever they do end up doing, is going to work for the story. And I really do believe that. I'm not nervous about this at all. And
said the key word there, which is faith, because that was the one thing I was going to say, and then you dropped it right out there. I mean, you definitely have the faith that I find I struggle with it.
Yeah, no, I believe in this team. I really do think that we are in for a really remarkable story, and that the way they tell it, the level of taste. Listen, like Carrie Fisher is so beloved in fandom, but she was amongst the cast and crew as well. And I really do think, as far as people who are best equipped to make that decision on how to best honor her legacy and her character, I really do think they are the right people. So, you know, for what that's worth, I guess. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what in the final story. I'm open to whether they decide to kill her off or keep her alive, or show, if they do, what kind of on-screen stuff. Like, honestly, I'm just here to hear along for the ride. I just want to see the film, the finished product, and then kind of make my judgment from there. I guess what I'm saying is I don't have my heart set on one thing. Like, if they do CGI or don't do CGI, like, I know people who are like, they should recast. Or there are people who are like, no, they should do CGI. And then people are like, no, they should gracefully, like, write her out without really addressing it, because anything else is a, you know, like, and mm-hmm. Here's the thing, like, these are people who don't know Carrie Fisher personally. And guess what? The people writing and producing these films knew her personally. So let's wait and see what the final story is, I guess is what I'm
saying.
Well
played.
All right. John Boyega has spoiled The Last Jedi. We know the ending of the film, and we're going to tell you right now. No, I'm kidding. John Boyega, he was on Twitter, and he... Well, this is his tweet. I'm just going to quote it myself. Time to play a villain, eh?
Mm.
And of course, the world freaks out. And then he said, he quickly follows up. Guys... Actually, you know what? Here's the time difference.
Within that's like 24 minutes.
With 20 minutes. He's like, guys, LOL, it's not Star Wars related. At which point, Mark Hamill replies to him and says, see how easy it is to accidentally leak a spoiler, son? I see what you're doing there, Mark. Hope you didn't say anything about our relationship. In hashtag episode 8, hashtag scared Sithless. At which point...
great hashtag.
At which point, Boyega tweeted him back, Dad, how about you train me too? Post-blaster overheats and it's whack when fighting. At which point he's like, all great ideas, John, but perhaps we've already said too much. Hashtag loose lips sink starships.
I love how he says, and by someone I mean Disney legal department.
That's true. I mean, you got to be careful, man. You got to be careful. I don't know why. It is the age of social media. It's a different world we live in.
I love those memes where it shows Mickey as Sidious, because you know you always hear about the Disney legal department, the long arm of the mouse.
You got to be careful there, John. I don't know. I think John. Here's the other thing: is that it's now that I follow the, of course, I follow the cast on Twitter all the time, and it's always interesting to see how they handle it. And I love John Boyega. Well, and Mark Hamill. They're great. I love the fact that we live in this world where Luke freaking Skywalker is talking to Finn on Twitter.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No. It was. All right. So, Mark, tell me about this story. You've got Marvel's Darth Vader number one.
Yes. So the Geek Nerdum, they had an interview, and we found out some fun little interesting tidbits from the comic. Recently, Marvel released Darth Vader number one, describing Vader's backstory between Revenge of the Sith and Rogue One. What's the interesting thing that really jumped out to most people is this is literally after the great big that ruined so many people's prequel Blu-ray experience when they added that no to it. But it, in a sense, some people felt like it retconned it away, but no, it doesn't. It literally picks up right after that. And after Vader goes, no, he goes, no, no. And they add a couple more no's to it. So it makes a little more sense, but that's not the important part. The important part is what we learn about Sith lightsabers. Yes, the comic reveals to the fans how Darth Vader constructed his epic red lightsaber. He seeks a little help from his mentor, Emperor Palpatine. Yeah, you all know about the saber he lost, so now we're going to learn about the one that he built. Vader asks his master about the red lightsabers and expresses a desire to know how they get their color. The interesting thing here is Palpatine actually answers Vader by saying, the crystals from any Jedi's saber will do. As you know, the Kybers are alive in their way. Like any living thing, they can feel pain. through the dark side, you must pour your pain into the crystal. And then, at last, the agony becomes more than it can stand. A beautiful crimson, the color of your rage. He explains
Mark,
the color
pause for
of the crystal.
Mark, pause for a second. You kind of went from Ian McDiarmid to Stewie from Family Guy there at the end.
I think it was when I hit Barbossa. I hit a moment
a
of Barbossa
crimson.
And got off.
It's more like becomes the more than it can stand, a beautiful crimson, the color of your rage. That's the first time I've ever attempted a Stewie impression. I'm actually kind of happy with it. I'm not going to lie.
Nice. Yeah, he explains that the kyber crystals used in Sith lightsabers were regular kyber crystals before being stolen from the Jedi. Then a Sith separates a crystal from the Jedi, uses the dark side of the Force. They pour their rage directly into the lightsaber, which causes the color to shift. Now, we've discovered
so,
the opposite of
this.
This
is Darth
Ahsoka.
Vader. All right, so pause for a second. Let's just pretend for the sake of the hypothetical situation that someone weren't familiar with this comic series, right? What let's just say, what comic series are we talking about here, Mark? Is this coming out? Is this currently released?
This is currently in release. I believe issue 1 is out and issue 2 is on its way.
And it is entitled
moment.
Darth Vader.
It is Darth Vader, and I want to say it's called The Chosen One. Like so, Darth Vader lines, they all say Darth Vader on the outside, but then you get inside and find out what it's called. And I want to say this one is called The Chosen One.
All right, help me. I wish Aaron Goins was on this call. He could answer these questions too, but I bet you can too. All right, so there was Vader Down, right, a Marvel comic series. Was there also like a Vader comic that was just titled simply Vader, or am I thinking
yes.
of the...
No, the Vader comic, that one was out, and Vader Down tied that one to
help.
The regular Marvel line.
Mark,
yes.
help me! If just... I podcast about Star Wars. I consider myself reasonable, even though I don't read all the comics. I love Shattered Empire. There's some of the recent stuff I've liked, but I don't read that much, I'll be honest. But at least I try to keep up with, like, the Kanan comic or the things that are coming out, right? But I... For the love of Pete... Help me. Don't make a Vader comic, then a Vader Down comic, and now Darth Vader number one.
This is Marvel's thing, though.
I'm
with you. Okay, so I'm a big Venom fan. And the Venom series, when it started, it was Venom Lethal Protector 1-6. Okay. Since then, every Venom series has pretty much been short runs. Even when they give him long series, they very rarely go past 25 to 30, right? Well, currently, they've given it to another guy, and then that guy lost the suit, and Brock has it back. Well, they get to, like, the sixth issue in that, and we discover that it's actually 150 issues of Venom, that they've been tracking it, even though it's been, you know, one run, and they keep changing the title.
And
they're
all
1-6. Yeah, so it's like, finally, it's like, wait, we're at 150? There have been 150 Venom issues? That's a Marvel thing, and it drives me absolutely nuts. I'm right there with you.
All right.
And
yeah,
I think we're
going
to get a lot of that
stop
in
it.
The aspect of Vader.
Yeah, just stop it. Make it. We'll do one Darth Vader comic and keep it the same title and keep the numbers consistent. For the love of Pete.
Yes.
All right.
Now,
sorry,
the aspect about this, which is interesting, is this is opposite of what we got in the Ahsoka novel, where we see Ahsoka take one of the Inquisitor's red crystals and purify them and make them the white ones that she uses later.
Okay.
She goes in and heals them in a sense. So now we're able to witness how they've been corrupted, as we've also witnessed them being redeemed. So that's kind of cool. And also we learned the comic will further show how not only does Vader construct the lightsaber, but we also believe that this will be the only one that Vader will be using in the entire trilogy.
Huh.
That could change down the road, but as of right now, that is the thought. And I will throw out there that those thoughts somewhat do change, because we assume Sidious only had one lightsaber until we saw him welding two in the Clone Wars.
Oh, true. That's a good point. Man, wasn't that a great scene?
That was.
That was Clone Wars at its best, man. Absolutely. Hey, let's jump to another story we have here. And this is, once upon a time, a couple years ago, I would always delete the Disney Parks news. I was like, I don't care about Disney Park. Now I'm that guy. So let's do it. In just a few short weeks, guests can glimpse. Can catch a glimpse of the location starships, creatures, and droids that will populate this remote village on the Outer Rim and experience the world premiere of a detailed model showcasing the immersive 14-acre lands coming to Disney Parks in 2019. There will be artwork and media on display to show guests the creative process of bringing Star Wars, the Star Wars galaxy to the light. Now, this is not a rumor. This is from the Disney Parks official blog. Mm-hmm. When is this? I want to go. Call me, Disney. I don't think that's going to happen. A galaxy of resorts, galaxy of stories coming to D23 Expo.
Mm-hmm. See, I've been saying it from the start, man. You got to get in on the shareholding. That's where you're going to find all your breaking information. It's always going to come to them first, the D23. You know, really putting your finger on the Disney pulse will get you quickest to the pulse of Star Wars fandom.
That's amazing. Dude, I'm so excited. I want to go to D23.
You almost wonder, like, is it just going to be like one of those 3D maps, or is it going to be like one of the Disney park maps that you see all decorative and stuff?
I don't know, but I will say this. Bethany and I are trying to go. I'm not going to lie. I'm just going to say it right now. We haven't finished the details. Like, we haven't even booked flights or anything, and we've been so busy at traveling and getting back from work. I'm just going to say it here on the podcast. We're going to apply as press and see if we can get in. You never know. It's not an event we've ever done before. Hopefully it'll work out. If it does work out, we'll report from the ground and let you know exactly what that event was like. But who knows if it'll work out. I'm just hoping. That's actually, Bethany and I were scheduled literally to meet and work on this stuff today. We had to postpone it till late tonight as I'm recording this podcast. So it's top of mind, and I can't keep my big fat mouth shut. So we're going to try to go. We'll see if it works out. If anybody works or has gone to D23 or knows anything about the press process or anything about the event, and even if it's just going as an attendee, shoot me an email, riley@starwarsreport.com, and just kind of, if there's anything you know or ideas or suggestions or anything like that, I would love to hear from you. And by the way, also, since I just mentioned that and it came to mind, big shout out and thank you to a ton of you guys who emailed in to help get the word out on the Faith in My Friends documentary. I had such a blast, and I sent out early copies to the folks who emailed in just to thank the people who are ready to hit the street when it's released and get the word out. So seriously, thanks, guys. Really, really appreciate it.
And if you're at D23 and you're on the approval process, just disregard what he said about shutting his big fat mouth.
Exactly. Where I lost my entire so
VR.
Yeah, it's an entire pavilion at D23. So that's what it's going to be like. So they're going to have a huge display and stuff like that at D23 itself. And that's big news. Like, we're going to learn a lot about the Star Wars lands once D23 hits, and I can tell you. It's going to be a big deal.
I almost wonder if our next story would be something that they would eventually use to tour. I mean, our next story would be something where Disney could send a D23 link out and everybody just plug into the link, slide on their VR glasses, and look around the park. I mean,
yeah,
technology is there, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah, this is a piece from Nerdist. Star Wars VR shows off Vader's volcanic lair. Interesting. So, basically, there's this in-house VR conference, like technology conference, and they announced that Star Wars VR is being worked on, and it was being written by the Batman Begins and Man of Steel writer David S. Goyer, and it'll take fans inside an interactive narrative surrounding none other than everyone's favorite Sith Lord, Darth Vader. Now, recently at WWDC, that's Apple's big annual event where they reveal the new iPhones and stuff like that, they showed a glimpse of a VR user on the planet Mustafar with things like Imperial shuttles, TIE fighters in the sky, and even Darth Vader himself. I'm looking at these GIFs that they've got going. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It was a presentation from John Knoll, by the way, of course, of Industrial Light and Magic, and the man with the best goatee in all of Lucasfilm. I'm just saying.
Yep. they also say, while we have no idea when this will be available for people to buy, they say, again, this is just a proof of technology and not an official launch showcase. But having done every cursory virtual reality programs in the Star Wars universe, namely the Rogue One VR missions and Battlefront 2 for the PlayStation,
which
they
done.
Can't wait to spend more time immersing in Vader Town.
I've done it, thanks to Nathan Butler. And that's kind of the stage of what Battlefront is. It's kind of a proof of concept. It's immersive and it's fun. It's also like 15 minutes, right? It's not like something you're going to be doing for hours and hours and hours on end. But interesting. All right. Well, let's take just a A brief timeout. I'm going to grab a sip of water here, and we will be right back. And we're going to talk. Here's the deal, guys. There was kind of a thing in the old Star Wars community. And by a thing, I mean somebody stole a bunch of stuff from Philip Wise and Steve Sansweet. And there's a hullabaloo, and there's been a lot of reporting and information about it, but we're going to actually dig into, I think, some larger issues that this can serve as a conversation starter. So let's do it. Hey guys, welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast, of course, brought to you by the fine folks supporting us directly and making this show happen each and every week at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Head on over. It's our tip jar of sorts. You can toss in a buck or two or five and then catch some sweet bonus content, support the show directly, join us for our monthly supporter-only Skype sessions where we just chat about what's been going on. Big thank you to everyone who's been supporting us. This week's featured supporter that I want to give a big, big shout out to is, and I want to make sure, is John Selig. John, thank you for supporting us. He just jumped on board around the time of Celebration, and I'm just getting around. We've got a couple more of you guys who've jumped on in the last couple weeks. Now that I'm back from traveling, I need to catch up and make sure I get everybody in the chat, because that's what we do. We have an awesome group chat amongst the patrons where we talk about the show and Star Wars and just have a good old time. So join us, take a look at the different levels that you can support us at and some cool bonus content, and head over to patreon.com/StarWarsReport. And most importantly, I'm just going to throw this out there. When it comes to you guys supporting us on Patreon, we are getting ready for, I mentioned this last week, I've not had the time to really sit down and properly prepare it, but we're going to be doing a relaunch with a new bonus show, a weekly bonus show that we're working on right now. And I'm really excited to bring this to you guys. So supporting us at any level is really just making a big difference with making the show happen. And just a big, big, big thank you to everyone who makes it happen. That's all I'm going to say on it right now. Join patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Stay tuned. We'll have more announcements on that in the coming weeks. And now, back to the show. It's not often when Star Wars fandom, like not Star Wars movies or producing or acting news or like, you know, updates on the new movie or the new trailer, when Star Wars fandom makes mainstream news. Like when I see Steve Sansweet's mug all over the LA Times and CNBC, and when my mom texted me that she's like, Riley, did you see the Rancho Obi-Wan stories on like the front page of BBC News? And I was like, wait, what? They had like it in the entertainment section.
Usually you're like, wait, what cool item does he have that the world needs to know about?
Exactly. But no, in an open letter to fans published on RanchoObiWan.org, this note from Steve Sansweet came, and I'm just gonna read this. It's a little long. I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but I will read you just a few excerpts to give full context, because I feel like a lot of people know the story, and more details of it are coming out. But what I want to say about it really isn't that related to the actual event that transpired. But this direct from Steve Sansweet: "Dear fellow Star Wars fans and collectors, I need to share some distressing news with you because I need your help. In February, we at Rancho Obi-Wan found out that we'd been the victim of a major theft that surreptitiously took place many months over late 2015 through 2016. More than 100 valuable items stolen, the majority of them vintage and U.S. carded action figures, many of them rare and important pieces. Most have either been resold or professionally appraised for a total of more than $200,000. I remember I was reading this. I was like, oh, what important. When I saw this initially, I was like, what important, you know, one item must have been stolen. And then I just read that. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. And there are kind of details within it, but I'm actually going to, instead of going to the details of what, and I also I want to take this time to, like, we will put the link in the show notes for this episode. I have so many thoughts, but I'm bursting at the seams with things I want to say, but a couple things up front. We're going to get links to the story as well as to Rancho Obi-Wan in the show notes. Donate, donate, donate. If you're not a Rancho Obi-Wan member, become one right now. It's a great way to support them. And of course, if you're a collector, or even if you know collectors, it's made a big splash, but every person counts. Anyone you know who sells or buys collectibles, take a look and see if you can help out and recover any of these items. They really do need help, and that's sort of that's the issue now. Now it's happened. It's been uncovered. It's being resolved. It's being adjudicated in the legal process. But the thing now is, how much can Rancho recover, either in terms of the physical items or, honestly, go become a member now and support them? That's a great way to do it. CNBC actually had a piece that they just released. I believe it was last night I saw this. It just came out. Here's the headline, and this is, like I say, this is odd seeing, like, the NBC colors in front of a Star Wars, in front of the headline: Rare Boba Fett figure snares alleged Star Wars thief, at least 100 collector's items still missing. And here's the bullets on it: Carl Cunningham charged with stealing more than 200,000 worth of Star Wars merchandise from the world's largest collector, Steve Sansweet. Cunningham of Georgia is also charged with stealing $40,000 of, a $40,000 prototype Boba Fett figure from Texas collector Philip Wise. Zach Tan, who had been buying items from Cunningham for months, realized this after speaking with Wise that he had bought his figure, and about 70% of the items that were stolen from Sansweet. So, like, in a series of events that quickly made this theft uncovered, as the piece starts, it all comes back to Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mark Hamill had quickly tweeted, you know, maybe you guys should put a list out there of other items stolen so people cannot get swiped or swindled. And of course, that was part of this letter. Sansweet attached a long list of items, the 100 items that were stolen.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we'll link those in the show notes as well. So this prototype Boba Fett was shone a light on this whole crime that was being committed over a long period of time. By the way, the perpetrator has been indicted by a grand jury in Denton County, Texas. It's not a fun story.
This is the crux of having a large collection. I mean, I don't have a large collection on Sansweet's. You know, you get to Sansweet's level and you got to buy a whole warehouse. I've just got a garage. But I have, you know, my scouts come down in here and check it out and stuff. My son's friends come down. My daughter's friends come down. And if I didn't have all my stuff in, you know, filled out in certain rows and stuff, like, my desk right now is chaos. You know, somebody could walk up and grab this Slave One off my desk, and I'd never know it was gone. Now, you go over to my bookshelf where they're all lined up meticulously in a row and stuff, and, you know, I'd probably notice one missing there, or maybe somebody move it and slide one over. I might notice that. But yeah. Once you get over, you know, a certain number of items, it does become harder to track your own stuff unless you're going out of your way to do a database and then going in and doing inventory every week. But who is going to do that? It's not like you're working at a Subway where every week some new employee is coming in, they're stealing your dang bread or something.
Yeah, no. It's interesting because there's the element of the actual crime and the way it took place. The thing that really I think is the most hurtful, and I've known this, and the piece points this out rightly. The Star Wars collector community is super tight knit. Collectors from around, and I'm just going to read this. Collectors from around the world come together at conventions and events, show their love of the iconic film franchise, and often assist each other with adding and completing their collection. For Wise, this incident hasn't tarnished his view of the collecting community. Quote: I choose to believe that this is a one time thing. I still trust all my friends. It's just better for me to lock the doors now. It was an extraordinarily rare occurrence. Neither Cunningham nor his attorney immediately responded for CNBC's request for comment.
What's Cunningham going to say? I mean, look at the size of the cojones I had. I mean, that's where I get. It's like the thought that you're going to be able to sell this rare, exclusively rare item to anyone and not have that come back to you. Like, you know, you and I, we were talking before the show about when I was a younger kid and I had gotten to a bad place where me and a friend were shoplifting G.I. Joes. And, you know, there is an addiction side to the adrenaline factor that, you know, maybe he started out small with something that was innocent, you know, like a candy with grandma, you know, like, oh, it's in your mouth. You can't have it now. Grandma here gives a penny off kind of thing. And it just progressively grows from there with the thrill of the adrenaline rush or something. Yeah. I mean, for me, that's kind of where it got. I mean, when I got in trouble and my days of shoplifting came to an abrupt and as they should end, it was that thrill of I got to get something new, you know, and that's just I'm thinking with these are all such one of a kind items. It's not like you could just be like, oh yeah, my friend gave me that. BS.
Like, well, I was gonna say, and Mark, you actually, we had a whole conversation about this in the pre-show. I'm gonna put that up on our Patreon. And upload it there. But we had a whole conversation about this, and you rightfully pointed out, like, you got caught, and and you're like, because you were talking about this sort of progressive thing as a kid, where you're like, well, if I got away with this, maybe I'll get away with that. And in your case, it was like ended with piling up G.I. Joe figures at a CVS. In old Cunningham's case, it's a $40,000 Boba Fett figure from Philip Wise.
My mom took not just my G.I. Joes, but my Ninja Turtles, my He-Man, my Transformers. All my toys went straight out to a burn pile and I watched them all on fire. Now, I don't know what this guy's got going on, but if he had a mom,
Mark,
my
you just
mom,
don't, hang
he
on,
might have
you
no clothes.
You just said got rid of all your action figures. Wait, that's a dramatic way of getting rid of what your possessions were. That is a hardcore style of parenting.
and that was the punishment for the shoplifting. Keep in mind, my groundation, that was the start of my 2-year groundation from sixth grade all the way up into my freshman year. I managed to drag it out an extra year. But it was like when I got grounded, it wasn't for the shoplifting. That was me losing all my toys. I was grounded for skipping school because had I stayed my butt in school, I would have never been in that position in the first place. Yeah,
oh,
I learned
man.
A lot of lessons
oh,
in those
man.
5 years.
Ah, oh, those were, man, some different days. Different days. Yeah, it's, I don't know. But as you guys know, that's the meat and potatoes of the story itself. And I think as the quote from Philip Wise at the end, I have comments. I have thoughts on this.
Well,
I think there is a takeaway.
Because your comments are deep. I want to just say I think it's a testament to Sansweet himself that he is able to forgive this transgression and recognize that it could only be the only one. Because honestly, that was the first thing that ran through my mind is that opportunity that he has provided for our fandom to come out and support him and view his collection and stuff, going and seeing his stuff at Celebration. You know, the thought of that being lost to all fans, I mean, that was truly tragic. Not just the fact that the trust was broken for Sansweet, but the fact that the trust was broken across the board, because now Sansweet's trust is shaken. Can he trust any other fans? And so the fact that he was able to turn the other cheek in that situation, I mean, that is a big testament to his faith in humanity.
Yeah, no, definitely, 100%. And I think that, and like I say, that's an important part of it, because I have thoughts, and I think what this lends to an ongoing conversation I've had on the podcast a lot, but not because I think this is indicative of the collecting community. And in no way are my following thoughts an indictment on a specific community of fans. I do, however, have some really strong thoughts on, like, just an approach to Star Wars. Not just Star Wars. This is just kind of a larger than that. Like, doing this podcast, like, the reason I do it and what I love most about Star Wars is relational. It's friendships. And I really, really value. I can't even put into words the immeasurable value that Star Wars has brought to me because of the friendships that I've made through it. And that's not just because it's Mark and I happen to like Star Wars, so we now are friends because we talk about it. That's important in and of itself. But Star Wars, that's not an isolated thing. Star Wars itself as a story sets up that example. Now, I'm just going to kind of spoil what I said in the documentary what I ended. Because here's the thing, guys. If you paused the podcast and watched it already, you know. But if you have not watched it yet, what is in the little mini documentary is I filmed the whole thing, and I wanted to shoot an introduction kind of explaining how this story or the our journey to Star Wars Celebration and our experience there is sort of, I think, the prime example of what I love about Star Wars and what I think Star Wars' message is, and that is relational. It's friendships that are built. And there's the famous quote in Empire Strikes Back when, you know, Luke is in the midst of his training and, you know, he gets that vision of what's happening to his friends. And he goes on to say, I have to help them. And they're like, no, Yoda says, you must complete your training. And Luke is like, no, they're my friends. I have to help them. There's no choice in the matter for him. And here's the thing. That's a big issue, especially if you take in the message of the prequels and that, like, here's the thing. Yoda and Obi-Wan are still stuck in the old ways of viewing things. Like, this is the training process. This is what you do. You prepare. You get ready. You get your skills to where they need to be. And then you go kill Darth Vader and the Emperor and bring back the Jedi Order. And Luke's like, yeah. No. That larger picture, that larger goal, that ideology has to take a back seat to what's in front of me. I have to do what's right now. Not what's right for the Jedi Order. Not what's right for me. What's right. It's a moral choice. I will help. I can help my friends. I must. If I
That's
can.
That's a speech that Obi-Wan forgot to tell Yoda when he's like, don't send me to kill Anakin. He should have just said, no, I'm not going to do it. He's my friend.
Exactly. And that was the difference between Obi-Wan at that time and Obi-Wan later. And so, like, this is a big deal to me. Like, it's a really big deal to me because I think what the story makes me think of is the fact that I want to boil it down. I don't want to like stop and just sound too preachy or grand or theological, but it's pretty simple.
Well, let me let you off the hook because okay. I know like you don't want to upset collecting friends, and I'm a collector, and I think this is important for the listeners to note because as Riley puts this thought process out there, it's one that comes back for me because I am the provincial collector. You know, I can't get to as many of the celebrations and things that I admit there is a great pilgrimage. There is a great fellowship of fans that come together. And when you can't make it to there, you do find yourself kind of surrounding yourself with the things you love. And the heart of what Riley's getting at isn't an attack on us that collect. It's the waking up your eyes to the fact that those relationships around you are what connects it together. And so for me, some of the things that really are fun is when I have friends that I've met online that are looking for those things. And that's the aspect of the story that Riley was talking about before, about how the collectors get together and they help each other out. You know, that helping each other out part is the behind the scenes of the collections. When you see my collection, you don't see that you know, Ben gave me this and David gave me that and Desi gave me this. Like, most of the things here, yeah, I purchased, but a lot of the really cool and really awesome things to me, the things that have a lot more sentimental value, are things that were given to me by my fellow friends and those relationships. And what Riley's getting at is a bigger, broader fandom aspect that I think it's an important message, especially right now, for everyone to listen to. So I think, Riley, for you, like, I think you're worried about it coming across as attack, and I don't think that your heart's in that place. I don't think it's possible for you to make it an attack. Well, I think if anything, like, you may twist up your words, but I don't think anyone's going to think you're attacking collectors.
No, I hope not.
I'm letting you off the hook.
Well, I appreciate it. I feel a little bit better now that the hook seems to be gone. So no, but it is true. Like it's right there in the story. Like one of my favorite quotes of Yoda is, "Luminous beings are we. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter." And in Yoda, that he's speaking about it in a spiritual context, but I also think Luke's example in Empire is relational, and they're tied together. It's and again, kind of put more simply, it's for me. I'm of the opinion that Star Wars is about a who, not a what. Like that's the simple thing: who, not what. Whenever we have issues, some of our biggest issues in life usually come at the root of a who, not a what. And the biggest challenges in life come because of a who, not a what. Sometimes that who's ourself, And sometimes the who's you, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm starting to sound like Dr. Seuss. Sometimes the who's you, sometimes the who's something else, or somebody else. But in the end, like, it's the way I like to look at it is that there are always regrets in life. And you can apply this in any mythology that you love, whether it be Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. Of course, in Star Wars, you have the enormous loss of Vader, and the extreme regret he must have even all the way to the very end. But his regrets aren't possessional; they're relational. It's like and like putting it in the real world. At the end of your life, no one ever has a possessional regret. Like, no one's ever going to say, "Man, I really wish I bought that car." Man, I really, really wish that I had just that one other pair of shoes. No, people's regrets are always relational. I wish I'd spent more time with my son. I wish I had, I wish I had bothered to repair this relationship. I wish I had maintained this friendship that drifted away.
I wish I hadn't bought that car.
That's true. Yeah, because usually it came at the expense of...
I wish I would have paid attention to the relationship and not this...
I was going
to
say, because it came at the expense of something relational. So that's where I think when you're talking about achieving... when you're talking about the message of Star Wars, to me, it is relational. It's like even the most iconic... if you ask someone what the most iconic quote in all of Star Wars is, they're going to say, "Luke, I am your father." So two things. One, that's wrong. It's no, I am your father. And number two, it's relational.
I was your brother, Anakin.
Yeah, well.
You almost wonder if when Luke went to save Luke, when Luke went to save Han and Leia and them, if it was the luminous aspect of like, well, if I save them, I'll provide more light.
Yeah. No, maybe it could be. So many thoughts. So on that note, I'm going to close down the commentary. Although I don't want to be the only one to talk on this. Shoot us an email, starwarsreport@gmail.com, with your thoughts on sort of the message of Star Wars and how you relate it. And you know what? I do want to end the segment this way. I want to say that collecting. I will say my favorite aspect of collecting when I've done it and with the people I've seen do it. Is when it is relational. As the piece points out, like, the collecting community is very tight-knit. And for people who use it as a tool to connect, to talk, to have conversations, to experience, to go to meetups, to go to swaps, like these collecting swap parties at Celebration, I've heard amazing. I've heard amazing things. But I will say this. You know who does that best? Who uses a Star Wars collection to really do some remarkable good in the world? That's Steve Sansweet. So yep. I guess what I'm saying is, like, no, seriously, become a Rancho Obi-Wan member, like, right now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's jump into Boba's Bounty.
It was a lot to me. As you wish.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Each and every week, we like to talk about something that we've done or experienced or listened to or otherwise just want to highlight in the world of Star Wars. And this week, I'm going to kick us off. I had a great old time, a grand time, appearing on the Culture Clash podcast, specifically the Beru Stew. Luke, tell Uncle Bishoy speaks, Bunchy. I don't know why my Beru impression gets increasingly weird. Yeah, he's got too much of his father in him. Beru has some pretty quotable lines. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh man,
you better be here before sunset or sunrise, or hell to pay. All right, no, Beru Stew is the name of it, and they were super nice. Kevin and Kyle, they were great. They were able to talk about Star Wars and my experience and the Star Wars Report and starting this show. Go listen to it. The Culture Clash podcast is available on Podbean. Of course, you can just search for it on iTunes. That's the most recent episode. And I'll tell you what, man, I had a blast talking about it, and they were awesome for plugging the new documentary. And it was a good old time and a grand old time. And I think that's the other thing, is I'm going to be totally selfish and plug a part two, and that is, as I mentioned at the top of the show, and as you've heard me talking about it, I've spent weeks and weeks editing and putting together. If you want the reverse example of what we were talking about, or like a real showcase of what Star Wars has become to me and what it means to me in terms of friendship, go watch Faith and My Friends at facebook.com/Star Wars Report. It's the video there, and I'll be publishing it probably on Twitter, and I'm sure I'll be publishing it on YouTube. And I'm sure, you know what, if we have the link for it, we'll put it in the show notes for this episode. It'll be everywhere. Go watch it. It's awesome. And then I forgot to mention, I think I may have hit a couple of these last week, but it's just so much fun to showcase some of the friends I've made, whether it be Matt Rushing or whether it be kind of behind the scenes look inside those big panels. I'm taking the camera in there, whether it be the behind the scenes of the setup and highlights of the podcast stage show at Celebration, our trip to Disney with some of my ROTC buddies. You get to see Bruce Gibson leading us via straw. That was great. And you just Scott Rifen makes an appearance, and you get to see inside the Star Wars Report dinner at Celebration, and get some great stuff from there as well. So it's a grand old time. Check it out. Facebook.com/Star Wars Report. Faith in My Friends. You know what? By the time I do all of this, I bet, and I put up the blog post and everything, I bet just Google Star Wars Report Faith in My Friends, it'll come up. I bet. Ideally, if it works out the way it should. So there you go. There you go. I'll tell you what, man. It's been a great show, but let's get to Mark's bounty. What have you been on the hunt for, sir?
Well, I'm going to go around the world with this. I've got a light side and a dark side. Uh-oh. I figured since you were talking Beru, I would talk Owen. I went and saw It Comes at Night with the actor that plays Uncle Owen.
That was a good transition, sir.
It made me think about Star Wars films. You know, we're on this horizon where there is nothing but Star Wars films coming out every year from here on out until we're told otherwise. And this movie, I had no idea about it when I went in with the staff of the theater to watch it. I was just told, hey, we're watching a horror movie, and they had a bunch of spaghetti, and I finished early. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I haven't watched a scary movie in a theater in ever, so I went in, and, you know, at first, like, I was thinking, like, hey, is this like a zombie movie? Is this set in The Walking Dead? It seemed kind of scary. Had a couple jump scares. But by the time I got to the end of the movie, it was so pointless and boring, I can't speak about how bad it was enough. And it made me stop and wonder, because I have been seeing nothing but, this is the year's best scary movie. This is the scariest movie of all time. All this hype. The hype train does not end for this movie. And I watched the trailers, and I kid you not, everything that is scary in this movie is in the trailers. They put it out of order. They make moments in the film seem like it's like multiple moments in this movie based on the trailer. And it's that hype train that I worry about with Star Wars someday. I mean, right now we haven't had that problem. But at some point, I fear that they're going to get a movie like this. It's just so bad that they're like, we have got to sell it in the trailer because that's the only way we're going to make money. And I fear that when that day comes, there's going to be a lot of lost faith with Star Wars, because this movie was just that bad.
What if it's an Owen Lars spinoff movie?
Maybe, I don't know, but that's the dark side of it.
Hey, by the way, Mark, I would watch an Owen Lars spinoff horror film featuring Tusken Raiders. I would totally watch that.
That actually would be cool. That actually would be cool. And I think that's just it. Is for me, the It Comes at Night, the title itself was a MacGuffin, and that really just, I'm done with MacGuffins at this point. But so the light side of everything for me this week, I've been continuing to adjust the studio. I've been doing some shelf shifting. I took my Canon shelf. It's now sitting behind me here, hoping that it'll increase the audio quality, hoping to get some posters behind me so I can do some more videos and stuff. But yeah, I've been constantly doing that. I've been adding the pictures and sharing those on the social media and stuff. It's been fun.
Sweet.
It's a constant evolution. I've got plans, but no plan is solid, because once I move something, I'm like, I don't know if I like that or not. And if I do, it stays.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. It's looking good. I love it. I absolutely love it. You've been posting pictures, too. Do you have any pictures up on the Star Wars Report Facebook page yet?
Yeah, I got a couple. In fact, last night's picture I've got to get up. I haven't put one up yet, but yeah, it's pretty exciting. Every time I move something big, I'm like, I feel so accomplished.
Nice. Well, I'll tell you what, man. It's hard to believe, but I think we're coming towards the end of a show. I don't want to end it, man. I'm only just now feeling back. Like, I'm still feeling a little rusty, I'm not gonna lie. Taking those couple weeks off for traveling, it was just crazy. But yeah, guys, make sure you check out last week's episode, Bromancing the Skellig Stone, to hear the full story of Bethany and my journey up the Jedi steps, which I feel like is a good time to go. It's a good time to play a little bit of a different background music for us to take us out. I found this awesome remix of Jedi Steps, and I'm like, I'm going to use this on the show. So, like, I'm just, like, was using the best excuse. Check out last week's episode. It's there. We had a great time on it. Make sure you, of course, go to facebook.com/StarWarsReport and check out Faith in My Friends, the mini documentary of Star Wars Celebration Orlando. Share it, share it, share it with the world. Make sure everyone sees it. I think there's a really important message to it. I'm really proud of it and really glad to finally have it complete and published. And then, of course, let's make sure that we hit up our socials, right? Is that what the kids say, the socials? Facebook.com/StarWarsReport, Twitter.com/StarWarsReport. And, of course, we do really appreciate those iTunes reviews. Make a big difference. Leave us an iTunes review, StarWarsReport.com/iTunes. And, of course, well, oh, I almost forgot. Here's the thing. If you enjoyed the documentary, I sent a high-definition, full HD downloadable version on Dropbox and shared that out with all the patrons as early access for bonus content. However, if you're listening to this podcast and you want your own high-quality version and you don't want to just stream the Facebook one, I'd encourage you to just send me an email, riley@StarWarsReport.com, and just put Faith in My Friends in the subject line. And if you want, I will shoot you a link to that so you can download the nice high-definition version of the documentary and play it on your television, burn it on a Blu-ray, you know, watch it in high-definition on your iMac. You know, if you just want a little bit better quality, I'd love to share that with you. So, until next time, may the Force be with you. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. See you next time, folks. How epic is this, Mark?
I'm like, dude, I gotta get a copy of this.
I'll get it to you. It's amazing.
It's got a Lord of the Rings feel to it.
Oh, yeah.
You find all the treasure.
So, man, I'm pretty excited about this song. I'm not gonna lie. It's like the perfect remix of like Lord of the Rings, but also like Chariots of Fire, right? It's like,
yeah,
it's everything
at
once.
You got a pirates kind of like. It does. Makes me wonder, when Sansweet got the news, was he like, I'm one with the Force, the Force is with me, I'm one with the Force, the Force is with me, I'm one with the Force, the Force is with me.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. This has been the Star Wars Report Podcast. See you guys next week. Thank you for riding Star Tours.
Bye-bye.
And we're good. Woohoo! Brown.